This week on the Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Podcast.
Today on the podcast, we have Trevor Stevens.
And this is the disease that we call COVID-19. The recovery trial was really the stepping stone for the use of corticosteroids in severe SARS-CoV-2 infection. And it was the springboard that jump-started the REACT meta-analysis.
This podcast is made by and for our internal medicine residents to enhance our educational experience. The content, while edited by residents, is not verified by hosts or speakers, and we are not content experts on these topics. The content provided by the podcast is not intended and should not construe as medical advice and should not be used to diagnose or treat any medical condition. We attempt to avoid use of opinion, but all opinions represented are our own and are not representative of employer. Please keep this in mind as you enjoy our podcast.
Welcome back to Vanderbilt Internal Medicine Podcast. We have another episode of the Q Files today.
We do it with a very, very, very special guest that I'm very excited to have on the podcast today.
Why are you so excited, Alec?
Today on the podcast, we have Trevor Stevens, who, as he will tell us, is from the University of South Alabama, which I'm sure a lot of listeners haven't heard of.
Why is that important to you, Alex?
That's also my medical school. Oh, so yeah. I'm just a tad biased towards Dr. Stevens here. He's talking to us about one of the quickest practice-changing pieces of medicine ever.
So with that, let's get started. Trevor, welcome to the podcast. It sounds like Alex already knows most things about you, but for our listeners, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Casey, for having me here. Yeah, I'm from the University of South Alabama in Mobile, Alabama.
Go Jags.
Go Jags. We just built our new football stadium down there, so I've been watching some South Alabama football.
That's not going too well, is it?
We've had better days, for sure. But I'm a big runner. I love basketball. Love watching, you know, Vanderbilt play basketball. And I love going down to Percy Warner Park to run.
What are your plans for the future, your career plans?
I am currently undecided, but I know I want to go into academic medicine. I've really loved the Rogers Renal Service, so for those that don't know, that's our transplant nephrology service, so I'm interested in that. And I also love pulmonary and critical care. The recovery trial that I'm presenting today is really one of the game changers in critical care medicine. First thing I want to do, actually, is give a little background, because the science with coronavirus is changing so rapidly. The first thing that we need to establish really is our terminology. One is that the virus is called severe acute respiratory syndrome, coronavirus 2, or SARS-CoV-2. That's the virus. The disease that the virus causes is called coronavirus disease 19 or COVID-19. And so we're going to spend the rest of the podcast trying to keep that terminology straight.
We'll do our best.
Really, coronaviruses, as you guys probably know, are positive single-stranded RNA viruses that are really highly infectious. And most coronaviruses actually account for about 10 to 30% of the common cold. The SARS-CoV-2, however, is genetically distinct, and it uses spike proteins to interact with host cell receptors, specifically the ACE2 receptors, to infiltrate epithelial cells in the nasal cavity, the proximal airways, the distal airways, and even the myocardium. Viral replication is highest in the nasal cavity, and this is important because it's highest especially early in the disease. And it's actually been estimated that because viral replication is high in the nasal cavity, it can infect 2 to 4 other people.
Hence our current situation.
And that's really before people even can develop symptoms. When SARS-CoV-2 invades epithelial cells of the lower airways, it causes a significant viral pneumonia, which can lead to hypoxic respiratory failure. And this is the disease that we call COVID-19. Essentially, SARS-CoV-2, once again, that's the virus, initiates a host immune response, which causes recruitment of inflammatory cells and release of inflammatory mediators. And it's this robust inflammatory environment that causes microvascular thrombosis and fluid accumulation in the lungs, which makes it difficult to oxygenate. Now, in order to combat this inflammatory environment, there's been several therapeutic interventions that have been proposed. Those include hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and remdesivir, but these have really had limited success for the treatment of COVID-19. One of the proposed interventions, however, was steroids, but really for several months, it was unclear if glucocorticoids were even helpful in patients with COVID-19.
I'm assuming that's what you're going to help us clear up today.
And that's what we're going to clear up today. That's where the recovery trial and eventually the REACT meta-analysis come into play. So in June of 2020, the recovery trial preliminary results were released.
This may seem like a dumb question, but I think it's worth reviewing so that we're all on the same page. Why have steroids been proposed to help the hypoxemic respiratory failure of COVID-19?
Yeah, that's a good question, Alex. It's really the thought was this extensive inflammatory environment was causing the disease, which is why the recovery trial looked at steroids.
That being said, what's the clinical question for the recovery trial?
So the clinical question that the recovery trial asked was, does dexamethasone reduce 28-day mortality in patients with COVID-19?
How was the trial set up?
So the recovery trial was a randomized, controlled, open-label, pragmatic trial that enrolled 6,400 total patients. 2,100 patients received either intravenous or oral 6 milligrams dexamethasone once daily for up to 10 days or up to hospital discharge, and 4,300 patients received usual care alone. I do want to point out that at randomization, 16% of these patients were receiving mechanical ventilation or ECMO, 60% were receiving oxygen only, and 24% required no respiratory support. And it's important to know that serious adverse events were not monitored in this trial.
Trevor, you mentioned that this was a pragmatic trial. I don't know that I have heard that before. What does that mean?
Yeah, so a pragmatic trial focuses on correlation between treatments and outcomes, which means it evaluates the effectiveness of interventions in real-life routine practice conditions. So that means that there's very limited exclusion criteria. A lot of the patients admitted to the hospital are included. And really, this is in stark contrast to an episode that Vic Enderu did in an earlier podcast. The POET and the OVIVA trials were not pragmatic because they had extensive inclusion and exclusion criteria.
Little callback there. I think that's our first Q-File callback.
I believe so.
All right. Can you talk to us a little bit more about how we classify COVID-19 between patients who are and are not on oxygen?
So those who are requiring oxygen have severe COVID-19, whereas those who are not requiring oxygen, we will say they just have COVID-19. And that's going to be important in the outcomes, which we'll talk about in just a few minutes.
So in this study, for every one patient that got high-dose steroids, two got usual care. What were the primary outcomes?
Right. So the primary outcome measured was 28-day mortality. And what it showed overall was that 28-day mortality was 23% in patients treated with dexamethasone versus 26% in patients receiving usual care.
That doesn't seem like a very big difference.
Well, it was statistically significant, and the absolute risk reduction was 3%, which leads to a number needed to treat of about 32. That means for every one patient out of 32 patients that you treat, you prevent death within 28 days. However, I want to go back to this difference in patients receiving respiratory support in comparison to those receiving no respiratory support. And we're going to break it down even further. The first group I want to talk about are those who are mechanically ventilated. In the recovery trial, the 28-day mortality was 29% in the dexamethasone group versus 41% in usual care. That leads to an absolute risk reduction of 12% and a number needed to treat of 8, which is really significant. Yeah. One thing to note, though, with these patients who are intubated is that they had a history of symptoms for an average of 7 days longer than the other groups, and they were also 10 years younger on average than the other groups. For patients who are receiving oxygen but were not intubated, the 28-day mortality was 23% for those treated with dexamethasone versus 26% in usual care, similar to the overall group. That was also statistically significant.
So you've covered patients that were mechanically ventilated and patients on oxygen. What if we just take out the patients who were not on any form of respiratory support?
Patients who are not requiring any form of respiratory support did not have any 28-day mortality benefit. In fact, the 28-day mortality in those who received dexamethasone was 18% compared to 14% in the usual care. This was not statistically significant, but overall harm could not be excluded because the point estimate favored usual care without steroids, and the trial did not record any serious adverse events.
Right. So what you're saying is that there was a trend towards it having a higher mortality rate, although it wasn't statistically significant.
That's right.
Are there any significant secondary outcomes that we should be aware of?
they did measure secondary outcomes, and it showed that patients in the dexamethasone group had a shorter duration of hospitalization. It's just 12 days versus 13 days than usual care. And they had a greater chance of being discharged alive within 28 days. One other thing to note is that those who are not on mechanical ventilation but were requiring oxygen were less likely to be intubated in the dexamethasone group.
Trevor, you cited the number needed to treat of these mechanically ventilated patients at 8, which is huge. And I know that's a large reason of why this recovery trial has gained such notoriety already. Help us to summarize this data into a concise point.
Yeah, absolutely. This paper did have a huge impact. Really, the conclusion is that dexamethasone decreased 28-day mortality in patients receiving invasive mechanical ventilation or oxygen alone. It is important to note the impact of dexamethasone was greater in mechanically ventilated patients than in patients only requiring oxygen, and it did not improve 28-day mortality in patients receiving no respiratory support. And actually, harm could not be excluded in this group.
How did this impact any other trials that were ongoing about the treatment of COVID-19?
In fact, the results of the recovery trial were deemed powerful enough to actually halt other studies that were looking at corticosteroid use in critically ill patients with viral SARS-CoV-2 infections. Actually, they ended up compiling all of this data. The data from these additional trials that were halted, along with the recovery trial, were ultimately put together into a prospective meta-analysis by a group called the WHO Rapid Evidence Appraisal for COVID-19 Therapies. This analysis became known as the REACT meta-analysis.
What you're saying is that they took all of these trials that had to be stopped early, combined them with the recovery trial to make one larger meta-analysis?
That's correct. Really, the recovery trial was the springboard for what we're going to talk about next, which is the REACT meta-analysis.
So you touched on it, but tell us a little bit more about how this meta-analysis was built.
So the REACT meta-analysis was a prospective meta-analysis that pooled data from 7 randomized clinical trials. It was conducted in 12 countries across the world, and it included 1,700 critically ill patients with SARS-CoV-2 infections. One thing that's important to know is that all of the patients in this meta-analysis were requiring respiratory support of at least 6 liters nasal cannula, and most studies only included patients in the intensive care unit or on mechanical ventilation.
Trevor, let me stop you for a second. You said 1,700 patients in this meta-analysis, right?
Yeah, that's right. It was 1,700 critically ill patients.
And I think if I remember correctly, recovery, you said there were 2,000 patients that got dex and 4,000 that didn't. So that's 6,000. How did this meta-analysis that included the recovery trial end up having far less patients?
The REACT meta-analysis, as we talked about, only included patients who were requiring a significant amount of oxygen, which is why their numbers are a little bit less than the recovery trial, which included all patients.
Got it. So just stricter exclusion criteria.
Right. Overall, of those 1,700 patients, 680 patients received either low or high dose dexamethasone or low or high dose hydrocortisone, and 1,020 patients received usual care or placebo. 56% of these patients came from the recovery trial. So about half of these patients came from the recovery trial. One thing to note, too, for this meta-analysis is that they did include serious adverse events for those patients who are not coming from the recovery trial.
What were the primary outcomes for the REACT meta-analysis?
Yes, so the primary outcome, once again, looked at 28-day all-cause mortality in COVID-19. And what's important to know is that the results between each individual study analyzed and then together as a whole with the meta-analysis were very consistent. Patients receiving any low or high dose corticosteroids had a 28-day mortality benefit of 32% compared to 41% with usual care. Once again, this correlates to a number needed to treat of 11. So for every 11 critically ill patients with COVID-19 we treat with corticosteroids, we prevent one death at 28 days. This mortality benefit was consistent with either dexamethasone or hydrocortisone use.
What about the dosing of those?
So it did assess low-dose versus high-dose steroid use. So let's define those first. Low-dose corticosteroid use was either dexamethasone 6 milligrams daily or hydrocortisone 200 milligrams daily. And in some trials, this was considered hydrocortisone 50 milligrams every 6 hours. High-dose corticosteroid use was defined specifically as dexamethasone 20 milligrams daily. It's important to know that both showed improvement in 28-day mortality, but it did not show that either the low-dose or the high-dose steroid was better than the other.
In the recovery trial, you mentioned there was a difference between those receiving mechanical ventilation and those receiving oxygen. Was that seen in this meta-analysis as well?
So in contrast to the recovery trial, the REACT meta-analysis did not show patients who were receiving mechanical ventilation to have additional benefit compared to those only receiving oxygen. But remember that patients who were receiving oxygen in this meta-analysis were requiring at least 6 liters nasal cannula.
You also mentioned that the meta-analysis was able to capture serious adverse events. Were there any secondary outcomes from these serious adverse events that we should discuss?
Especially for the group receiving 20 milligrams of dexamethasone daily. Am I reading that right? Is that a typo?
Yeah, that is not a typo. That is the correct dose that they received.
Wow.
We were able to look at serious adverse events from 6 trials included in the analysis. And remember, once again, the recovery trial, which contributed 56% of the patients, did not report adverse events. But of the 6 trials that did, that included sepsis, secondary infections, GI bleeds, and pulmonary embolism. There was no associated increase of serious adverse events with corticosteroid use, regardless of dose, even with the 20 milligrams of dexamethasone. But it's important to note that rates of delirium were not reported.
I think I would be delirious if I got 20 milligrams of dexamethasone.
I think we all would, Casey.
Delirium not being reported. Dr. Ely somewhere is shaking his head.
Yeah, he's probably sad they did not record rates of delirium. To summarize the REACT meta-analysis, really the take-home message is that administration of either dexamethasone or hydrocortisone was associated with decreased 28-day all-cause mortality from SARS-CoV-2 infection in patients requiring respiratory support. Mortality benefit was seen with both low-dose and high-dose corticosteroids, and there was no significant increase in serious adverse events, specifically infection.
We already know that the recovery trial has changed practice, but take us through a little bit of how this changed practice and how dramatically and quickly it changed practice.
The recovery trial was really the stepping stone for the use of corticosteroids in severe SARS-CoV-2 infection. And it was the springboard that jump-started the REACT meta-analysis. Essentially, the recovery trial halted several other studies looking at corticosteroids, which is really pretty impressive. Let's just talk briefly about previous studies of corticosteroid use in viral pneumonias, specifically severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, Middle East respiratory syndrome, MERS. Steroids in these patients were associated with delayed viral clearance without any benefit. And observational studies looking at steroid use in influenza pneumonia were actually associated with an increase in mortality. So this is really the first time that we've seen corticosteroid use in a viral pneumonia be successful. And with COVID-19, it's the first viral pneumonia where corticosteroids have shown a decrease in 28-day mortality.
Trevor, why do you think the patients receiving steroids are having improved outcomes? What's the reasoning behind it?
Let's go back a little bit to what we talked about in the beginning of this podcast. One, I think it's important to note that the benefits of steroids are dependent on the timing and severity of illness. In the recovery trial, steroids only benefited patients requiring respiratory support, and COVID-19 infection causes a viral pneumonia of the lower airways late in the disease process, which leads to this robust inflammatory response that we talked about. While this host response is necessary to fight the infection, at the same time, an excessive response can lead to endothelial dysfunction and fill the lungs with fluid, which makes it difficult to breathe. Patients requiring respiratory support likely have inflammatory lung damage, and glucocorticoids may diminish this inflammatory response and decrease further damage. However, remember, patients who did not require respiratory support did not show any mortality benefit, and harm actually could not be excluded in the recovery trial. And although there were no adverse events in the REACT meta-analysis, the recovery trial was the only study that included patients not requiring oxygen.
So the current thought is that the steroids are helping modulate some of that immune response to decrease inflammation and make these patients less hypoxemic.
Right. And that's why we think glucocorticoids help in these patients, because late in the disease, they may diminish this inflammatory response, decreasing that damage. But remember, early in the disease, SARS-CoV-2 viral replication is highest in the nasal cavity, and your immune response is absolutely critical to fighting and inhibiting this replication. So giving steroids at a time when controlling viral replication is important, and overall inflammation is minimal, may actually be more harmful than helpful. So that could be a reason why patients who are not requiring oxygen may not benefit from glucocorticoids.
What are we actually doing in practice? Obviously, this is practice changing, so we won't ask you that. But how are we doing this here? What dose? What duration?
Please don't tell me we're giving people 20 milligrams of dexamethasone.
So really, the optimal dose and duration of corticosteroids remains an open question. There was really no evidence in the REACT meta-analysis that higher doses of corticosteroids or 20 milligrams of dexamethasone were more beneficial than lower doses of steroids. A comparison between the two doses were not really analyzed or estimated. But regardless, our current practice here at Vanderbilt is to start low-dose dexamethasone at 6 milligrams daily for up to 10 days, or really until discharge, for hospitalized patients admitted with SARS-CoV-2 infection who require oxygen or mechanical ventilation.
Has anyone looked at the use of steroids in the outpatient setting?
No one has really looked at the use of steroids in the outpatient setting or in the clinical setting. The best data for this population comes from the recovery trial. And as we've kind of been hammering home, steroids are likely not the right treatment for patients who are not requiring oxygen, which are really all of the patients that you see in clinic. So the generalizability of steroid use applies only to patients hospitalized with COVID-19.
Again, I don't think we need to ask if this study is practice-changing for you, but can you give us some take-home points about the recovery trial and the REACT meta-analysis?
For those listening, really the take-home point I want you to leave with is that the recovery trial and REACT meta-analysis demonstrated that corticosteroid use in patients with severe COVID-19 requiring respiratory support reduces 28-day mortality. There is no benefit seen in patients not requiring oxygen. Alex, Casey, it needs to be emphasized. These studies quickly led to the widespread use of corticosteroids in critically ill patients with COVID-19.
Yeah, Trevor, absolutely. I don't think there's ever been trials like this, really ever. I happened to be working in the ICU the day that the REACT meta-analysis came out, and I remember that our attending stopped rounds for a good 10 minutes to talk to everyone about it and the historical significance of these trials. I mean, recovery came out in June, and within a week, Vanderbilt had a protocol in place where everyone was receiving dexamethasone. The REACT meta-analysis showed that six other large randomized placebo-controlled trials were effectively stopped as soon as the recovery preprint was available for review. The process of the academic medicine has always been long and rigorous, and you need several trials, right? At the end of every discussion of a paper, there's always, however, more trials are needed. And this is something that really overnight changed the face of medicine, and it's because it's a new disease. Something that we've really never seen before is that it really changed the way we practice overnight.
That being said, more trials are needed.
Of course.
Yeah, I think we'd be out of a job if we didn't need more trials.
Trevor, before we go, is there anything else that you wanted to teach us about COVID-19 today?
Yeah, thank you for asking, because I think it's really important to realize how isolated these patients in the hospital are with COVID-19. So the best advice that I can give, and this really is generalizable to all of your patients, not just those with COVID-19, but I would recommend just at least once a day to take 15 minutes or even less to learn something fun about each patient, to let them know that they're more than a disease and that they're a whole person and part of the team, to make sure that they feel included.
I'd also like to add, it's been a really tough time, I think, for everyone who's in training. So remember to take time for yourself. Make sure you're eating healthy, exercising, so that you can take care of your patients.
Casey with the wellness plug. I love it.
Well, we are both on the wellness committee.
Trevor, man, thanks so much for coming and doing the podcast after me harassing you about it for quite a long time. I couldn't couldn't pass up the opportunity to have two South Alabama folks on here.
Yeah, thank you guys very much for having me. And, you know, I'd also like to thank Dr. Todd Rice for reviewing my notes.
Stay tuned for our next episode.
See you guys later.